Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
All I got to do is work on getting that a little bit smoother, and I think we have the new open for the show.
Sure.
Because if we can go from Platts with Attitude Bitch right into Across the Nation by the Union Underground, we're set. It is February 25th, 2019. This is the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Good evening, everybody. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, bitches?
And the line in the sand, in honor of Ric Flair's birthday, the man, woo, the birthday boy, Andrew Balazs.
I like that one. We need to keep that one. I'm picking that one. No more third man. I like the line in the sand. I like that one.
Well, if you want me to, I can even give you music here because I have the Evolution song in my queue as well.
No, that'll just bring up bad memories. Let's not go to that right now.
It'll take us back to pay-per-views gone by from October of last year.
You thought I forgot, you cheeky bastard, you.
First of all, happy birthday, sir. I hope you had a wonderful weekend.
It was not bad at all, so yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Tony, I hope you had a good weekend as well, even though your birthday's in freaking October.
Oh, I'm still celebrating.
That doesn't surprise me for some reason.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. Man, we got a jam-packed episode of Monday Night Raw to get to, but before we do so, we actually have some news to discuss here on the show tonight. I teased it in the preview, so we'll start the show off with it here. For the first time in several years, we had a mass cut day in the WWE. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the releases. Tony, I'll start with you. The one that stands out the most to me is Arn Anderson. What do you think?
None of them stood out to me.
Well, thanks for contributing. Anything to expand
You're
upon
welcome.
That with?
No, not particularly.
Andrew, help.
I love when Tony just gives you nothing. It's fantastic. And he's just like, whatever. And then you're just like, I need more to work with. But
I'm not going
to
pretend to care.
Honestly, the two that were somewhat quote unquote surprises were explained as firings because of disciplinary action for TJP, which, let's be honest, who gives a fuck? And Arn Anderson, sure, that's kind of a historical blow because you think, wow, AA got let go? Really? Of all people? But, you know, it's backstage politics. It is what it is. And Tommy and Ty, we knew that was coming because they both requested their releases and they were granted. So this is just more a hard date on when that 90-day no compete starts, I think.
Well, that's actually what I wanted to touch on with Dillinger. Dillinger's 90-day no-compete actually expires 2 days before AEW's Double or Nothing, assuming they get to keep that name and nobody trademarks it while their request has been denied. Do you think Dillinger is somebody? Do you think Dillinger is somebody that Cody, the Bucks, and Kenny would go after?
I mean, him and Cody were a tag team at what, OVW at some point, and they've got some history, and Cody's said nothing but nice things about Ty. So, I mean, Ty and Arn could very well end up in AEW. Arn, because he's more that old school kind of brand of ways of thinking, plus he's a tag team specialist, so the Bucks, Billy Gunn, like, they would probably all want him, and we've seen Cody when he puts together matches. It's very, very 80s, mid-south, you know, end up, however you really want to word that kind of brand of wrestling. Like, All In, like, his NWA match, that reeked of, like, 80s nostalgia so much, in a good way. That wasn't supposed to sound negative. But, like, so Cody's got a love for it, so, yeah, Arn and Ty could possibly end up there, but I'm not holding my breath right away.
I think TJP probably ends up back in Impact Wrestling as Manic and or unmasked as just TJ Perkins once again, since there's no copyright on the TJ Perkins name. As for Hideo Itami, I think he goes back to Japan, possibly to All Japan, although I would not be surprised if New Japan tries to take a run at him for their junior division, if not higher up on the card than just the junior division.
It's going to be an interesting thing with Japan. That's all I'm going to say, because Noah is under new ownership and they've had some cash flow issues in the last year or so. But, you know, they're trying to steer the ship. All Japan has history with Kenta because he technically started in the All Japan dojo, even though it was very short period of time before he left with Misawa to go to Noah. And New Japan doesn't need him. Like, Kenta's like 38, 39, but, you know, so he's already a couple years, you know, younger than Tanahashi, and Tanahashi is seen halfway out the door. So I don't think New Japan's really much of a thing unless it's for maybe the G1 or like a tournament surprise, but not as a complete, you know, 100% sign-on.
See, I would disagree with that because I think New Japan realizes that to the American wrestling fan base, a lot of their stars have defected away over the course of the last couple of years. Losing Kenny, losing the Bucks, losing guys like Balor, Styles, over here to the WWE amongst various other organizations around here as AEW launches as well. I think Kenta is somebody that has an established fan base here in America that New Japan, for its New Japan World subscription, would be wise to sign in order to keep eyes on its product to the casual fan that might be drifting away from New Japan because of the defections.
Yeah, I think you're overstating how much people gave a shit about Hideo Itami and WWE, because as you could see from people's reactions, most people that were clamoring for him to do better were fans of his back when he was Kenta and Noah, and I don't really think New Japan gives a shit, to be honest. Like, Jay White's perfectly good as a foreign heel, you know, for Japan. Like, Zack Sabre's still big, Juice Robinson's still getting pushed. They don't need anybody to appeal to the Western demographic, especially not a Japanese wrestler who's well known in Noah. So that would just go over weird anyway, because the promotions over there have a very loyal fan base. So if Kenta were to come back to Japan, start all this hype, and then jump to New Japan, that would be seen as a pretty huge slap in the face.
All right, now let's talk about something that Tony can actually talk about with us, and that would be Raw. Are you actually going to participate, Tony, or are me and Andrew flying solo here? Because if we are, I just need to know.
Two people can't fly solo. I'm going to beat Tony to that punch before he says it.
Yeah, you really did. That was so close.
All right, Grammar Nazis, are we doing the show or not?
Well, yeah, of course we are. You want to talk about Raw on the Raw reaction? Crazy.
All right.
I mean, we could just keep talking about Japan. I'm okay with that, too.
No, that's what you have Pod is War for. You keep that to your second show, Andrew.
I almost said your B show. Japan there. You think Tunney and Chris Platt pay attention to Japan? Shit, I need to go to completely other people that, you know, just started getting affiliated with the Chair Shot to talk Japan.
Expand your horizons. All right, the show opens with Roman Reigns making his return after a 4-month hiatus. Four? Yeah, four sounds about right. End of September, end of February. That's about right. Talking about the fact that he's missed all of us in its time off, that there's no other business like what we do, and he claims that he's hoping to reclaim his yard. He says that he's a man of faith and that he believes in God and yada, yada, yada. I'm not going to go into all the religious details here. But when he first had to make the announcement, he was terrified of how everybody would react. The overwhelmingly positive reaction he got motivated him and kept him working hard towards reaching his goal. He says that he came out to give an update, and here is the update. He is in remission and will be returning full-time to the WWE. Obviously good news for Joseph Anoa'i, the person. Let's talk about how it affects Roman Reigns, the character. We see Dean Ambrose take on Drew McIntyre in a no disqualification match later on in the show. I'm going to kind of bleed these two together because of Roman Reigns' influence here. McIntyre picks up the win after an assist from Elias, who Ambrose interrupted earlier in the show. Ambrose is then a victim of a 4-on-1 assault courtesy of Elias, Lashley, Baron Corbin, and who's the fourth? McIntyre. Duh. The save is made by Seth Rollins with a chair and Roman Reigns. There is no interaction between Rollins and Reigns with Ambrose in the ring, but the save is made before Rollins and Reigns make their way back up the ramp. Tony, I'll ask you first. A, what did you think of Roman's return promo / announcement / what do you make of everything for Joseph Anoa'i? B, do you like the fact that they're kind of teasing one last run for the Shield if the Dean Ambrose leaving rumors are true?
I think that Larry Zonka's return to 4-on-1 Mania was infinitely more interesting than Roman Reigns.
Welcome back, Larry.
Yeah. No, realistically, the moment just, I mean, I get it, you know, assuming all this is true, and I have no reason to believe that it's not. It's great to hear. It's good news. But, man, it took a long time. I mean, you know, the show didn't, like, suffer for it. You know, there wasn't, like, matches or rush or anything, so I can't complain fully. It's just there's certain moments where wrestling, you know, indulges in its, you know, itself. I think this was one of those moments. It's hard to say that because you sound like a callous asshole, but I got to a point where I'm like, all right, well, now that you're back, let's get the show rolling. Like, what are you doing here? You know, like, I'm very happy for the man, but I didn't watch this to get a 20-minute announcement of I'm in remission, so it just kind of dragged on a little bit too much for me. But, yeah, good for him. With regards to the Shield reunion, I mean, I think they fucked it up so many times, and by so many, I mean, what, three, which isn't a lot, but still, just three in such a small amount of time that this one didn't feel all that gung-ho. I mean, the best thing that they had going for them this particular show was the fact that the crowd was so hyped for it, like super hyped. So with that, it brought a lot of energy to the moment, to the segment, to the possible Shield reunion. I think it'll be a feel-good moment, but it just, for me, for the show, if we're reviewing Raw, which is what we're doing, it just dragged on a little too long for me.
Andrew, first the Joseph Anoa'i perspective. Your thoughts on the announcement that the leukemia is in remission once again?
I mean, I think I messaged you on Facebook after that happened, and my feelings were very similar to Tony's, where I'm happy for him, and I can kind of grant him a little bit of leniency because he was indulging in the moment, and it was his first time back, and he probably really did miss whatever crowd reaction he got and just being on that stage. So sure. I'll allow him to indulge a little bit, but it did drag. It did seem a little long, got a little preachy with all the God shit. So that's neither here nor there, I suppose. That's just, if you believe, you believe. If you don't, it felt like it was just kind of going on for a while, but good for him. Like, I'm glad he's back. I'm glad that it's in remission, and I'm glad that obviously he was cleared well enough to throw like what, 7, 8 Superman punches and a spear. So that was good. The crowd loved it. So it all worked itself out well. And yeah, the Shield reunion number 27 or whatever in the course of like 12 months is diluted. played out, and I don't know. I guess it's going to be the Shield and Braun versus the four that, you know, they wiped out, and that's going to be where we go with Fastlane. So, yeah. Okay.
Well, the idea that I saw was the Shield versus Elias, McIntyre, and Corbin, and then Balor defending the IC title against Lashley.
Perhaps.
The one thing I
Corbin.
The one thing I think we can all agree on is they needed to show more of that chick in the front row bouncing during Roman Reigns' entrance.
Yeah, they only showed her for like the 3 seconds in the very beginning, and then never again. I was so sad.
I mean, you could see her while Roman was making the rounds, but obviously no bouncing. But you could tell it was the same girl. The shirt was there, and the very noticeable reason for that shirt was there, too. Just, if you have the chance, look it up. You'll thank me later. All right. The Raw Tag Team Champions are in non-title action once again as Dash and Dawson take on Aleister Black and Ricochet. And for the second week in a row, Andrew, the Raw Tag Team Champions lose a non-title match to the NXT call-ups. This time when Aleister Black pinned Scott Dawson at 3 minutes and 37 seconds with Black Mass. The talk is the Raw Tag Team titles are on the line in a triple threat at Fastlane as the Revival defense against Black and Ricochet and DIY. Your thoughts on both the match and the potential for the triple threat tag at Fastlane?
It's awful. We have seen the Revival in 9,000 multi-man shenanigan bullshit fucking matches. And then when they got a couple chances to go one on or two on two, one team on one team, however you really want to word that, then shenanigans again where feet were on the ropes or under the ropes and refs missed it and all this other shit. Why? We don't need to throw 27 people in there. And why the fuck are you jobbing out the champions? Your job may be a strong word. But, like, they just won the fucking belts. It was supposed to be this big feel-good moment of they finally overcame the odds and they finally won the titles. You have them lose to DIY. Sure. I'll accept that because they were a dominant tag team in NXT. They were at that point positioned as the two main singles champions. So that one makes sense. Ricochet and Black, that's so shoehorned. The match, you barely saw any of it because they took a commercial break in the middle of a 3-minute match, and then you come back and it's, you know, 30 seconds of something happened, Black Mass, okay, it's over. So, like, the match sucked. That idea of a triple threat sucks. And I don't know. It's just, it all sucks. I'm not a fan of it at all.
Tony?
DIY, are you doing this? There's no... Okay, so what we're trying to do here is we're trying to mask lack of story with good wrestling. They're trying to give or appease us wrestling fans by saying, this is what you wanted. You want wrestlers to wrestle. Well, guess what, bro? They're wrestling. And you're just like, well, yeah, but why? Like, legitimately, why? I mean, from a kayfabe standpoint, of course, and no one would shy against a title shot, you know? No one's going to say, no, I'm good. I'm not going to go for the tag team titles. I'm on Raw. I just got here, and you're giving me a title shot? Fuck yeah. But there's just so many missing pieces here that no one is going to care. So what you're doing is you're alienating the people like us who want to see wrestling, because you're insulting our intelligence, and you're alienating your crowd who doesn't care about internet stuff because you don't have a story developing. There's nothing there. And I mean, man, you know, your dick shows up on the internet once and now you're losing to people from NXT in like 2 minutes. It's unfortunate. I'm not saying that's the direct reason why, because we saw this last week. So it's not like they really changed course because of it, but I don't know. It just, a lack of interest. It doesn't make much sense. It's not something that you can latch onto or care about. You kind of saw it tonight. No amount of good wrestling will overcome lack of story. It will only help the story. It'll only help to tell a story. Tonight, there wasn't a story other than the Revival kind of sucks. And that's unfortunate because they're the champions.
Are you going to comment on the Dash Wilder thing, or should we just move on?
I mean, I was just going to say, well, what's everybody's hot take? Does that mean Matt Riddle goes on a losing streak? Let's go.
Riddle me this.
Or is it just because Riddle was apparently more impressive that, you know, people were just going to give him extra wins now just because they're in awe?
Well, if you're going to show it, it may as well be big enough to show. You guys are a bunch of dicks. All right, let's move on.
Hey, tell that one to
Snoop
Seth
Dogg.
Rollins.
Snoop Dogg wishes Ric Flair a happy birthday and looks about 70 himself doing so. Jesus Christ, when did Snoop get old? Tony, you're the hip-hop expert here.
Well, once he became Snoop Lion, he aged progressively.
I knew you were going to say that. That's fantastic.
The previously mentioned Elias in-ring concert happens here. The only other thing of note, other than that, the fact that it leads to him interfering in the Ambrose and McIntyre match later on, is Lacey Evans once again interrupts the commenters putting over Lacey huge, Renee especially. Talk is that Lacey's in line for the Roman Reigns of the female division push, which is going to go over fantastically, I'm sure. Tony, you don't watch a ton of NXT. Andrew and I do. What is your opinion of Lacey Evans?
Insignificant, boring, tall, cheap clothing, which doesn't make sense considering she's supposed to be some, you know, Southern belle. That is lack of brand names, totally made in the back. The purse had no name on it whatsoever. It's probably, like, definitely not Michael Kors. Probably, like, Guess on the clearance rack, if anything.
So was that your guess?
Yeah, it was my guess.
It was Dolce & Gabbana.
It was not Dolce & Gabbana. I know Dolce & Gabbana, and that was not
it. No, it was Dolce Colt Cabana. That's what it was.
I said Gabbana, off-brand.
I didn't see a Jewish star anywhere on it, although it would explain why.
You didn't look at the clasp, did you?
It would explain why it's cheap. I have no interest in Lacey Evans. Zero. Like, not any. This whole Grandpa Simpson walking in, dropping off the hat, coming back, you know, walking out, does nothing for me. I find it stupid. I also don't believe in this whole mega push thing. I mean, let's look at the source for a minute. Who is it? The Melting Pot? Fuck that guy.
As a PWG regular, Tony could say FDM to DM. So, Andrew, as the NXT watcher, you're a little bit more established with Lacey Evans. Honestly, I never saw anything special in NXT personally. I don't get it. I mean, I understand the gimmick, but I don't see the appeal. I don't think she's that good of a worker. She's nothing special on the microphone. She doesn't have an overwhelming presence either to me. Where do you fall on Lacey Evans?
She's odd, and I mean that in the respect of she's more character than she is in-ring ability, and you're introducing that onto a brand that doesn't really have, and that's a problem. So I don't mind Lacey in the ring. It's fine. The women's right kind of, you know, funny little pun that she does before she punches someone in the face with her right hand. Like, I like that gimmick. I like the whole old bomber style pinup, like, you know, World War II Southern belt, that whole kind of gimmick, because she is a former Marine, so it makes sense that she would enjoy the pinup style because it was glorified back in World War II, all that other stuff. I get it. I like it. I like her. I don't think, you know, I don't mind the way she looks either from a purely aesthetic guy kind of perspective. But the way they're introducing her is just dumb. Like, I like the vignettes, if you want to call it, that she does on Twitter, where she, like, does her own little, like Martha Stewart, like, cooking kind of things, or making sweet tea, or making pumpkin pie, or, you know, calling everybody nasties, and, like, she gets her character. She does, but you don't see any of that on Raw. You just see her basically being Southern Belle Emelina, and just showing up, doing a thing, and walking away. And we all know how Emelina turned out.
Well, I think Lacey's a lot more dedicated to this character than Emelina was, which I believe will help her in the long run. But honestly, I don't feel like this is going to work. We'll see what happens. I've been wrong before, but... All right, so we move on with a handicap match as the Riot Squad takes on Ronda Rousey and her best friend, Natalya. Because anytime they team up, they have to remind you that Natalya Neidhart is Ronda Rousey's best friend, best friend, best friend!
Wait a minute. Her last name is Neidhart? That means she's the daughter
Stop
of
it.
Jim.
Stop it.
Oh, my God.
It is a no-contest finish, although technically I guess Rousey and Natalya get the win by disqualification, when Becky Lynch shows up and thwacks Natalya with her crutch. She's had that crutch for quite a while.
He said thwacks. That's funny. Also, it wasn't a handicap match. I don't think Liv Morgan was actually in the match, but she was there, you know, so sure.
I could have sworn they announced that it was a 2-1-3 hand. I honestly didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the match.
It wasn't. She was on the outside. She was on the outside, though, tripped him up, tried to play innocent, got run over, and then right before Becky came in. So it was a regular tag match.
Well, it shows how much attention I paid to this match.
I didn't pay much more either, aside from I assumed it was a handicap match initially, too, because they said Natty and Ronda versus the Riot Squad. And I'm like, oh, it's 2-on-3. I guess they're really proving that the Riot Squad sucks. Oh, no, never mind. Liv is just dancing around outside. Okay.
Apparently, Liv sucks enough that they don't let her in the ring with Ronda. Anyway.
She's from Jersey. She's really good at sucking. What can I say?
Hey, speaking of Jersey. Booked it.
Hey.
Andrew.
What?
Harry, I'll be staying in Jersey when I go to New York.
The Raw reaction.
Barely
like
New Jersey.
The Raw reaction would like to send its condolences to Andrew Belaz and Tony Acero's family on their imminent demise. We do apologize, but shit happens.
Oh, I'll survive.
You might, Andrew won't. All right, so let's talk about the post-match here with Becky laying out Natalya with the crutch and then her scrapping with Ronda in the most ridiculous-looking cheeky back and forth before the agents, producers, security, and police officers, in quotation, air quotations on a podcast, cops get involved in breaking everything up there. Tony, you mentioned words in the group chat that I didn't think I would ever see you say. I need you to explain those to everybody here. A pull-apart brawl that... You stop it right now.
I meant pull apart bra, and my phone auto-corrected into brawl. no, realistically, there's a couple of reasons why. Obviously, the cops were fake, but this was confined within its own story. It did not over embellish, and it didn't include characters and people that had no role in it. Which later on this evening, another segment did have characters and people who shouldn't have been involved in it. And it ended up kind of hurting the segment as a whole anyway. But with regards to this one, it was effective because first of all, it looked real. And it's very hard to do a pull-apart brawl that looks real, and I'll tell you why. What they do is they hold them back for 5 seconds, and then character A is able to release himself from the shackles of 20 people and attack character B. And then they pull them back. And then character B is able to release themselves from the shackles of the, like, 20 people and attack character A. And it's all so extra choreographed and noticeable and annoying. And then you just get this whole bullshit commentator people saying stupid things, and it just makes the whole segment kind of trashy. And, of course, they include the entire roster for no reason. Tonight didn't do any of that. There was no pull apart, pause, one person gets the upper hand, the other person doesn't. No, it was like, oh shit, we have to keep these girls apart. And not because they're going to tear each other apart, but because Becky shouldn't be here. Like, that's the natural reaction. Becky shouldn't be here. If it was two wrestlers, both on the roster, why are you holding them back? And the old excuses to save the main event, to prevent blah, blah, blah. Well, if that's the case, they shouldn't be wrestling at all, you know? So, and why not let them fight? Why not see this animosity, you know, turned into something? I get it. You want to hold your horses and you know, wait to the last moment. But we don't even get that half the time. Half the time we're seeing these people match up on random ass tag matches. So this just seemed like a new way to see something old. And that's what I really enjoyed about it, because it looked real. It felt real. Becky got taken away by cops, and notice that the cops held her back. They weren't really worried about Ronda. WWE people were worried about Ronda. So it's just like, oh shit, you know what? That worked in this particular situation. Good job, guys. And how rare is it for me to say that? So, you know, I got to give it to them.
Andrew, your thoughts on the pull apart brawl, then we'll talk about Ronda Rousey's promo.
Yeah, I didn't like the brawl nearly as much as Tony did. It came off really awkward, really kind of like stagnated. And what did Ronda take the crutch away from Becky and then give it back? Like,
yes.
Like, that was such an awkward interaction in the beginning. And then it's like, then one like pushed or hit the other one. Then the other one was yelling and didn't really swing. And then you needed more people to start piling in before then they tried to start to swing. Sure, dynamic-wise and how it was set up, yeah, I get what Tony was saying, that it's a little different. It's not the typical pull-apart. It kind of adds a layer to the story. Sure, execution still looked stupid. So, like, I don't know how to feel about it. Hell, even Becky's part in it wasn't great, because you could tell she was playing to words that she was scripted to say. Because when she wasn't sure if the camera was close or when it was kind of close, she repeated herself multiple times. Like, you know, don't cuff me. Those hands are what needs to hold the women's title up or something like that. Or you should be arresting them because they stole my chance or something like that. Like, they're so cliche bullshit lines that kind of made me lose interest. Because I'm like, Becky, you're better than that. You're more clever than that. I've seen you on Twitter. Like, this is bad.
Speaking of bad promos, Ronda Rousey and Stephanie McMahon have interaction afterwards, where Ronda decides that if the McMahons aren't going to clear Becky for the match at WrestleMania, she's taking her ball and going home Steve Austin style, leaving the women's championship in the ring at Stephanie McMahon's feet. Tony. So she's impressed people. She's impressed people with her progress in the ring. Where is it that you think Ronda needs to improve on the microphone?
She's got to slow down and trust herself in ad-libbing. Because you'll notice her biggest issue is talking way too fast, flubbing lines, forgetting lines, and trying her hardest to remember them. If you forget your line, you gotta make it work. You got to make it work right there on the spot. You have to try and figure something out. You know, you have to meld the script with what you're trying to portray. And I don't think she's gotten that down quite yet. I get what she was going for. I get what WWE was going for. But because she kind of messed it up, it didn't have the impact that it should have had. So it kind of made Hollister jeans wearing Steph look stupid. Like, you're staring at the belt like it's just died. And the impact that should have had was minimized because Ronda was unable to fully, you know, express what she wanted to. You know, a lot of people were questioning, what was it that she said? What was she trying to say? And she had good lines in there, like calling her the ginger douche. And I feel like there's potential, and I feel like she gets some good jabs off, but she's so worried about getting her lines across in an angry way that she becomes stilted. She stops, she forgets her lines, and it's very, very noticeable. That's what I think she needs to do to improve. The good news is she has time. The bad news is I don't know if she's going to be around to fix it. Might not even be her fault. I mean, she's been in movies.
Andrew, same question. What do you think it is about the Ronda Rousey aspect of her promos that needs the most significant amount of improvement? Because to me, this came off as a terribly rushed and awkward segment with the way that Rousey was speaking and the way that Stephanie was so condescending towards her.
Ronda has this issue where what she says, not only does it sound rushed, but it also comes out unnatural in a way. Like, certain jabs, like Tony was talking about, like the ginger douche and stuff like that, that's fine. those seem like something she would say. But then when she gets into the whole diatribe of, like, the setup and all this other stuff, like, kind of like, what was it, 2 weeks ago or whatever, when Becky was being taken out of the building, 2 or 3 weeks ago, whatever the fuck it was, and she had that whole condescending, smarmy, Paul Heyman-esque kind of thing to say to her. And it's just like, that doesn't fit. That doesn't fit you as, like, what we know Ronda Rousey as. We've all seen her in interviews. We've all seen her talk because of movies or after fights. She's not that eloquent. She's not one to put words together very, very seamlessly. So something like the Ginger Douche, fuck you, I want this title. You don't want to give me this, the title match at WrestleMania that I want, then you know what? Your cash cow's going home. Take your belt. Fuck off. Like, something like that would have been a lot more natural. Obviously, she can't say all those words, but that same kind of attitude would have worked a lot better than her basically just trying to hammer home her point to the point where she lost the point, and it just kind of got muddied and muddled, and then everybody's left sitting there going, why is the belt there? What is she doing? Did she quit? Is she just leaving and like a crybaby until Becky shows back up? Like, fuck is this? So, like, she just needs to be more concise and just more straightforward with what the fuck she wants to do. And stop with the angry baby face shit. Like, the... Stupid.
It's going full Julia Stiles.
Exactly! This isn't 10 Things I Hate About You!
Speaking of people who take their balls and go home... Steve Austin's the very next thing on the show, wishing Ric Flair a happy birthday and pausing for those goddamn what chants in a pre-recorded video. Really, Steve? What the fuck?
He's not dumb. He knows he'll do it.
Or should I say, what the fuck? Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers are in the ring. Jinder is complaining about not being invited to Ric Flair's party. He challenges anybody who is invited to Ric Flair's party to a match. Kurt Angle comes out and makes Jinder his bitch in about 3 minutes with an ankle lock. Kind of abandoning the Kurt Angle is on the decline storyline here by giving him the win over Mahal, as it is a counter out of Mahal's finish right into the ankle lock. That sees our ending of this contest here. Andrew, we've established our thoughts on Jinder Mahal on this show. The Kurt Angle storyline, while it had some potential, seems to have stalled. Where do you go from here with Kurt Angle, in your opinion?
I didn't know we had to think of a way to go with Kurt Angle. Like, he doesn't need an angle. He doesn't need anywhere to go. Like, he shouldn't really even be wrestling. Like, fuck is his deal? Like, I felt this was just a feel-good kind of moment because it was, you know, legends were going to come out, and, you know, and what kind of stupid, weak-ass setup for a match is, I'm angry, I'm not invited to a birthday party, I'm going to fight whoever's there. Now, does that work anywhere? Like, maybe it's just not a Jersey thing, but if you fight somebody invited to the party and you beat them, do you then gain entrance to the party? Like, is this some unknown WWE rule that I'm not aware of?
I think it's more of a, if you beat somebody in Fight Club, you get to join Fight Club situation.
But you're not allowed to talk about Fight Club, so how'd you find out about Fight Club?
Well,
I cannot reveal my source.
Shut up about Fight Club. Jesus.
That's the point right there, though. So it's like, the whole premise was dumb, and then Kurt Angle coming out, I guess he's the only one that could really go between, you know, Ricky Steamboat and Sting and Shawn Michaels. So it's like, sure, I guess he drew not only the short straw, but like the only straw. So I guess that had to happen. And that the highlight of the whole thing was after the match, he played Fling the Sing. Or like right towards the end. I forget how that was. But he flung Sings. I was happy.
After the match. After the match, it was everybody's favorite game show. Fling that Sing. Tony, your thoughts on where they go from here with Kurt Angle?
I mean, Jinder, oh man, okay.
We can talk about the two chin locks in a 3 minute match for a total of about a minute combined if you'd like to.
Well, And then, okay, no, seriously, Angle, I'm all for the redemption storyline at WrestleMania, because it's a good story. It's not taking up a lot of time. Kurt Angle's cool or whatever. He's on the roster. Sure, why not? But him tonight, it seemed like an afterthought, and it was just a weird juxtaposition to have him wrestle a match and then come out later in a blazer and jeans. Like, is he a legend, or is he a wrestler? What are we doing here? What story am I supposed to be able to follow, and which one do I believe in, you know? Do I believe that Kurt Angle's done wrestling and can't really do it, or are you going to give me a match where Jinder holds his chin for roughly 73% of the entire match? Maybe even more. I mean, realistically, it was like, 20 seconds in, and he's already got a rest hold. I don't know, man. Every Jinder match is just... And yeah, of course, I'm going to double down on what Andrew said. The whole idea behind it is just, I don't care. I don't care about him. I don't care about the Singh brothers. I don't care if there's one or two. I don't care if someone throws them. I don't care if someone doesn't. If they are never on my television again, would it matter? The answer is no. You know who I do care about being on my television? Alexa Bliss.
I'm with Andrew. I'm perfectly okay with a nice game of Fling the Sing every Monday night on Raw. It's something I look forward to. All right. Speaking of Alexa Bliss, it is your moment of bliss up next. Segway! As once again, Alexa gets interrupted. This time she's interviewing Finn Balor. She's interrupted by Leo Rush, who comes... Lush? Chinese there for a second? I don't know what the fuck
I like Leo
about.
What Rush. No, What Rush is best. Like, that should be his middle name. Leo What Rush. That's what it is.
What? Anyway, I probably have a Steve Austin What chant in my queue, but I'm not using that. Anyway. Rush comes out to issue a challenge on behalf of Lashley. Balor takes it that Rush is issuing a challenge on behalf of himself in an attempt to get the Intercontinental title and step out of the shadow of Lashley. Leo goes to argue that, but Balor talks him into it. The match is made, as apparently Alexa can approve matches now. I don't know when the fuck that happened. But the match is made. We come back from the commercial break, and it's actually a very well-contested match for the Intercontinental title, where the coup de grace followed after 1916 puts down Leo Rush at 7 minutes and 39 seconds. First, the moment of bliss. Tony, what did you think?
I mean, Alexis is hot, so that's cool. Her fawning over Finn is... I mean, is that her new character? She just likes all the dudes. Nothing wrong with
She's
it.
She's a slut.
Just very... No, don't you dare. You do not slut shame someone who adores the male body, because that's rude as fuck. She's not doing anybody. And even if she was, let the girl get hers. Every girl
okay,
deserves
she's a
to
visual
go to the ball.
Slut.
So I'm just a firm believer in a girl being able to get hers. So if she's getting hers, then by all means, go ahead. If you want to rub down Finn's abs, then, I mean, more power to you. But no, the segment was, I don't know, it was kind of a throwaway, but kind of not, because it advanced things, but it was a weird way to do so. It ultimately led to a match that was really good, but confusing also. I don't want to go too much into the match, because I don't know if you're done yet here, but basically it's like it's great to see good wrestling, but when it's not believable, it takes you out of the situation. So the match just kind of sits there on its own, and you're like, okay, that was fun.
Now, you can go ahead and discuss the match as well, Tony, because I'm kind of tying the two segments together here. So go ahead and give your thoughts on why you felt that the match was not believable.
Well, it was a good match. That's why I don't find it believable. Leo should be getting zero offense on Finn, because we are not to believe that Leo can take Finn on at all. And now that he did, to a degree where it was almost equal in terms of offense, where does that put us? Does that put us as Leo is a formidable opponent and an actual wrestler worthy of praise? Or is he not? Or what are we supposed to believe? Or are we just supposed to believe that this week, are we going to get a Leo versus Lashley match? Are we going to get him eventually breaking off? And if so, where does that leave Leo in terms of the roster? Because really the only person he's bigger than is Hornswoggle. So I don't know. It just kind of removes you from it. It's like, I don't know. It's just, it's a performance, and it was a great performance. I really enjoyed it. I really did. I thought the match was great. I thought it was awesome. But one dude's the IC champ. The other one is Bobby Lashley's lackey. So where do we, what did we gain from it, basically?
Andrew, I know you have a well-established dislike for Lio Rush on this show, but you have to admit the match was pretty good.
No, I don't. The match was mediocre at best because in a similar way to Tony was aiming for, there was no believability with this entire match, so I was disengaged immediately. Why do I care? Lio's a joke. Even Finn brushed off his offense initially. Then, yes, it got close at points, which kind of made you go, oh, dragging this match out. At no point did you ever sell the believability, the, you know, anything for Lio that he was going to win the match. And I can't call that a good match when there is no moment that you kind of stop and go, oh, wow, maybe they're going to pull it off. That was a good flourish. Maybe he'll pull it off here. No, that never happened in the match. Were the moves that they did okay? Sure. Did they have decent chemistry together? Sure. Was the match anything that you'd ever remember nor care about in a month's time? No.
Not even.
No, I personally really liked the match between the two of them. I think that they told a very good story with Finn's knee being worked on for most of the match so that Lio could get in the majority of the offense that he got. Balor did a very good job of selling said knee, and Lio looked very good attacking it in spots as well. I know that there's a bias against Lio on this show, and personally, I don't understand it because everything I've seen from Lio, I've been a fan of his. I really hope that he has the opportunity to break out as a singles guy in the WWE. I don't think he will because of his size, and if he does, it'll be on 205 Live. But look at what somebody like Mustafa Ali has added to SmackDown. I think Lio could very well do the same kind of thing for Raw.
The difference with that is Mustafa Ali has convincing enough offense, and he sells convincingly on his face, and you get invested because of his body language and the way he performs in a match. There's nothing that connects you to Lio because he always comes off like a douchebag. He always looks like he's either running for his life or then he'll outsmart you, quote unquote, and then he'll look like an arrogant prick. And there's really no reason to engage with that character. And he doesn't show offense beyond flippy indie bullshit. I hated him in ROH because that's all he could do. And he couldn't even do that half as well as anybody else in ROH. And he's the same thing here. He's nothing special, except for the fact that he's like 5 foot nothing, and he looks like the size of a toddler. That's about all he's got going for him, is that he's really small. So it's weird to look at, depending on who he's matched up against.
Lashley.
No, you're doing it wrong. No. Lashley. That's for the big man, the little man, the big man's help man. Yeah. Lashley.
Hey, Meatwad's back.
All right, I got to admit, that's fucking funny.
Oh, hell yeah, Frylock.
All right, so I know we're welcoming back Larry, but I think that one of the other people whose Raw review I read on a regular basis, besides Tony's, Thomas Hall, has this to say about the Finn Balor and Lashley match, or the Finn Balor and Lio Rush match, and I believe this is where you guys are coming from. Is there a reason that a former Universal Champion and the current United States Champion, he means Intercontinental Champion, is having a competitive match with the loudmouth manager? I know Rush can work and is very athletic, but there are times when he should just be taking a beating. J.J. Dillon once told a story about wrestling a match as a manager and being competitive because he had wrestled for years and knew his way around a ring. The promoter yelled at him afterwards for acting like a wrestler instead of a manager and destroying the illusion. That is a lesson the WWE needs to learn with Rush.
Completely. Look at Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan got his ass kicked by women and a whole bunch of other people, even though he was a competent and decent wrestler beforehand, because he was a manager. I think he's even gone on record saying because he was a manager. It didn't matter what his, you know, background was. He was a manager. He was a chicken shit pussy manager. He's supposed to get his ass kicked by anybody and everybody. Same thing with Cornette. That was always Cornette's MO because he got his ass kicked by midgets and women and all this other stuff. So, like, you know, what you going to do?
Blogadoom.com, Scott Keith's Blogadoom, Thomas Hall's weekly Raw review is available there. Give full credit for using the quote. All right, let's move on, where Lashley is then supposed to take on Braun Strowman, but the match never happens as Braun Strowman proceeds to run through both Lashley and Lio Rush, laying both of them out at ringside. I think they did us a favor, and the show was probably running long, and hence why we didn't get a match here. I don't know. I feel like these guys could have a decent power matchup, but neither one of them seems especially motivated at present, in my opinion. Tony, agree, disagree?
Who are we talking about?
Strowman and Lashley.
Oh, dude, what the fuck? So, yeah, I don't know. Strowman has fallen far. Not that he ever deserved to be high, but, man, from the dude was smiling behind Triple H. Like, he is officially, his character is like, next to nothing. You can't go out, truck Lashley down, and then be smiling behind Triple H. And, I mean, we'll talk more about that moment and in connection to the end of Raw. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I was uninterested. And you know, I know that truly the only person here who has not been interested from the jump is Ben Andrew with Braun Strowman. And the dude, I mean, Raw is proving him right. Like, he's not – you can't hide behind the aura that Braun Strowman had. You know, you're not going to save him. You're not going to have him flip another fucking car and have us be interested again because – I have zero interest now, and I can't point to one specific thing. It's a whole bunch of little things.
I appreciate that Tony acknowledged that I've been anti-Braun before it was cool, so I get to be the anti-Braun hipster. Thank you very much. But I do agree with your sentiment when you were phrasing the question, Harry, that it probably did save us a little bit, because the match was probably going to drag if there was a match. It was going to be a clunky brawl, probably with some interference from Lio, some resting holds, and all that other shit. Maybe we'll get that next week. But I'm glad we didn't have to deal with it this week, because I know we're not completely done with everything on Raw, but oh my God, it was so fucking boring. Nothing stood out. And if I had to actually sit through a match between Lashley and Braun, I may have just stopped watching and then just been talking to you about God knows what was else on TV after this point, because fucking Raw, man. Ugh.
Well, that new show on NBC debuted tonight that I'm kind of interested in, The Enemy Within. I don't know if you've seen the previews for that. It looks very interesting. Plus,
I did not. I've been catching up on The Passage. The Passage is very good.
The new season of The Voice started tonight as well, with John Legend as one of the coaches, if you're more into the reality spectrum of things.
I see. Never watched that. I don't mind Masked Singer, though. Masked Singer's finale is on Wednesday. But, you know, I didn't really get into Voice.
Christine and I gave Masked Singer a chance on a whim, and we've watched every single episode. We're looking forward to the finale on Wednesday as well.
Yeah, there's something entertaining about singing and Guess Who thrown together as a game, as a reality show, technically.
Tony, have you watched any episodes of The Masked Singer?
Is that on Pornhub?
It might be.
Actually, I believe the Pornhub version is called Masked Swinger.
You know, I Googled Masked Singer, and it came up Thai Singer. Sable Masked Feet Worship. Yeah, no, it's not on here, so I haven't seen it.
Very well.
Okay.
Shout out to Pornhub for Tony. Are you wearing your Pornhub t-shirt, Tony?
No, I'm wearing a Michael Scott t-shirt.
Yeah, that couldn't be further away from Pornhub, so okay.
Well, that boy is office these days. You know what it is. All right, let's go ahead and move on here. Real quick, I forgot a backstage segment with Heavy Machinery and the Ascension because
you didn't
frankly,
forget it. You could overlook it. It's fine.
w apparently WWE has more or less forgotten about Heavy Machinery and the Ascension as well, so 6-1. All right, let's move on. The final Black History Month segment is here with the superstars paying a visit to where Martin Luther King was shot. That seems a little bit morbid. But, okay then. It is definitely Black History. Not the good kind, but it's there.
It checks the boxes then. There we go.
The previously discussed Drew McIntyre, Dean Ambrose, no disqualification matches here. We've already hit that, therefore we move past it. It is going to be Bayley and Nia Jackson, a preview for the women's tag team title match at Fastlane as the Boston Hug Connection defend against the Samoan Slaughter. This is as bad as fucking Ambrose having the sirens in his music. What kind of goddamn stupid-ass fucking name is Samoan Slaughter? Deep breath, still have to finish hosting the show.
It's Samoan Slaughterhouse. There's a house after the slaughter. That's not a terrible name. It's just you would expect that on, like, Jamal and Rosie.
Shanti.
Or Roman and someone his size.
Tamina
and Nia.
I actually like Jamal and Rosie's name as 3-Minute Warning. I thought it was pretty clever.
Oh, I do too.
Did somebody say
thank God Bischoff gave him a good gimmick?
3 minutes?
No. DeMarco actually has that as a freaking button to push in Blog Talk. Don't do that. That's his gimmick. No.
Well, one of them is dead, so it'd be like, what, 1.5 minutes?
Both of them are dead.
Oh, shit. Looks like we're out of time.
That's a good point.
Hey!
Oh,
but the tape machines are rolling, everybody!
Oh, God damn it, Tony. No! Oh.
Jeez.
I'm bad! And I'm better than
all right, I'm good. I mean, the reason we're talking about 3-Minute Warning and Eric Bischoff right now is because none of us want to talk about Bayley and Nia Jax, right? I know your girl was at ringside for this match, Tony, so I'll let you go first and discuss how wonderful Sasha looked. But the match itself was just the match itself was just kind of there until Bayley hit Hail to the King for the win at 9 minutes flat.
Oh, Nia. You just suck.
You just Nia. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah. Sadly, it wasn't that bad of a match from her, though, today. Honestly, the only really bad thing I saw was when she was trying to do the counter to the senton. She, like, moved forward when she fell, and then Bayley rolled away, so it just nobody was even close, so it looked like Bayley didn't even have to dodge. Like, I don't know who teaches Nia how to actually do moves, because she doesn't do them well.
No one teaches her shit.
Should probably, like, link
thank
up
you,
with
Tony.
A big wrestler and be like, hey, so how do you make things believable but not hurt anybody? But that's the thing. That's one of the things that bothers me with Nia, although I don't 100% know because I'm not backstage and I'm not Dave Meltzer. I'm not going to pretend to know. She just strikes me as a person who is fully okay with where she's at right now. You know, like she comes across as, like, I deserve where I'm at and you guys are haters, as opposed to someone, and I'm not talking about on screen. I'm talking about Twitter and just certain things that I've seen, interviews, responses. It just seems like, you know, she's not really interested in becoming a bigger, better, a better, bigger person. You know, that is her role. You're big. You know, how can you utilize that without actively hurting someone and still looking good on screen? I don't know that she's looking for the answer for that. And that's kind of what's one of the things that's really upsetting about her.
Andrew, anything to add to that? Because that's pretty much verbatim what I say about Nia on almost a week-to-week basis on this show. So I got nothing to add.
That's accurate. I think we've all kind of said very similar things, maybe in different fashions. But, like, I don't know. I hope they figure it out, because obviously they're not pivoting away from her. So they're just determined to shove her down our throats and keep her on TV, even though she's terrible and she injures people. But I guess she'll figure it out eventually. They tend to. I mean, even Viscera figured it out eventually.
Also dead, by the way.
But figured it out. He was awful. Like King Mabel. Think about that match against Diesel. That's Nia Jax level of like competition right there. He got better.
Interesting story. Well, maybe not so much interesting to the listener, but to me anyways. I've actually never seen that Diesel King Mabel match. I'm working my way there right now, actually. I'm up to the August 14th episode of Monday Night Raw from 1995, so I'm getting close to SummerSlam 95. But I've never watched that.
Pucker your butthole and brace yourself, buddy.
It's like sex with Kobe Bryant in a hotel room. Like it or not, it's going to happen.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Fuck. You want to quote Aqua Teen? I'm going to go Family Guy. All right, let's move on. The final segment on tonight's episode of Raw is the Ric Flair. What? That's not fair to Flair. Woo! All right, anyway. Is the Ric Flair birthday celebration. After a list of special guests is brought out, Ricky Steamboat, Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, Sting, not Arn Anderson.
Hey, low blow.
I'm pissed off that they couldn't let bygones be bygones and let Arn be a part of this. Anyway, we have a video on Ric Flair's career. Flair is about to come down to the ring when it is revealed that Flair has been taken out backstage by Batista to set up his potential WrestleMania match with Triple H that was teased at SmackDown 1000 with the Evolution reunion. I bit hard on the fact that I thought Becky Lynch was going to be involved in this segment, so they kind of caught me by surprise with Batista. Was I the only one? Did you guys see the Batista twist coming? What did you guys think of the segment? Tony?
I did not see it coming. It's funny because there's an interesting moment in wrestling where something like this happens and you get a little tickle inside of you that you think was never going to happen again. And it's that feeling that WrestleMania is coming and that shit's going to be huge. The problem is WWE has messed up so many times that the tickle only lasts for a second before you look at the grand picture and you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. So seeing Batista on the screen was awesome. And his little one-liner that he did was also awesome. But the whole roster on the stage, no one caring other than Triple H, the reasoning behind it, which we'll eventually get an explanation, and I'm pretty sure it's not hard to create one that works, but it was one of those moments where you're like, oh, shit. And then you're like, wait, what? What happened? You want what? So I'm not upset because, like I said, I haven't felt that tickle, if you will, in quite some time. Certainly not this year leading up to WrestleMania. But once it happened, I was like, here we go. And then it lasted such a short amount of time because I was like, well, wait, what? So I don't know. I'm hoping they explain it. I suppose we will see. Pretty sure Andrew has some thoughts.
I mean, that is the point of the show, for us all to convey thoughts. So thank you for
and to react.
Yes, yes, yes. So I didn't see it coming. I mean, I saw a couple reports that said Batista was there, but I didn't put that together necessarily. A clever way to get Hunter's attention, because on SmackDown 1000, Hunter just kind of chuckled it off, kind of like, hey, we never had a one-on-one match, or I never beat you, kind of like, okay, that's cute, whatever, let's just keep going. And, you know, with how much Triple H reveres Ric Flair, yeah, it makes sense, go after Flair. I would have liked it to be done a little differently. Like, I would have liked maybe Fifi to still be back there with Rick and then have her run out in the middle of the video package and make it actually seem like it's, like, not planned and something crazy is happening, and suddenly they cut back to the ring and see Fifi talking to Triple H, and then Triple H looks up at the screen and there's Batista dragging out, you know, Flair. That would have probably felt a little more organic, and that's just nitpicking, though, because it was, like, the best thing, the coolest thing that happened on the show. It was nice to see Batista. It's awkward to kind of think that Triple H and Batista are very, very large names from, like, the last 20 years, and this is going to be, what, middle of the show, maybe? Maybe even the opener, depending on how they decide to put it. So it's just one of those weird things that they give such a nice angle to a match that's not even going to headline WrestleMania. And with the, you know, without mentioning the Becky Ronda thing that we all know about, this is like the hottest angle going. And it's not even for a main event thing. It's not even for anything we quote unquote care about, because there's no active roster really involved. That's the disappointing part, that, you know, they're putting all this attention into Legends essentially, and the main roster still can't fucking figure it out.
Yeah, you know, that's what I kind of, what bothered me amongst many of the little things was the idea that this had so many levels of intrigue, which proved to me that the WWE can create something like it, and yet they don't. And it's like, it's not because of the history. You can focus on that. You can focus on Evolution. You can focus on Triple H's love for Ric Flair, Batista's adoration, and trying to do something finally that gets his attention. And probably going to hear next week that Triple H has ignored him over and over for a match, and Batista had to go to these lengths just to get it. But why not? Why can't you do this with the current roster? You know, where is the motivation to create something magical for them? It just screams like, you know, just, this is, you know, and I never like to say this about Triple H or Steph or Vince, because everything seems so A, negative, and B, kind of just rumors growing into something huge, you know, like Vince likes only big dudes. And like, okay, maybe that's true, but don't tell me that little dudes haven't gotten a chance, you know? So the inflation of the idea of just extreme nepotism and the clique and having your own little thing. But you see something like tonight and you're like, damn, dude, like, you just gave yourself the best storyline going into WrestleMania outside of Becky Lynch. Like, that, come on, man. You couldn't sit down for a second and say, what can I make? What kind of magic can I create this year? Because as a writer, that's what I would be asking myself every fucking week. What kind of magic can I make today? What kind of magic can I create tonight? When I'm writing my own shit, I don't go, gotta get this story done. You know, I don't sit there and say, fuck, I got 1 week to do this. Like, no, I'm like, man, what can I make? What story can I create? What magic can I create on these pages that will make not just me happy, but my audience just ecstatic, you know, and want to know more? This is the first Raw, and I don't know how long, where people are, they're really excited about next week. Why is that not every week? Why can't you do that? Of course, if this were happening more often than not, then I would shut up. I'd be like, well, it's a good show. It's a good product, you know? But back in the heyday, not heyday, but like, let's just think of a TV show that we love. Like me, I've brought it up many times before. Breaking Bad, I didn't watch this show until season 4 was already airing. So I had to catch up. And let me tell you, there's a difference between binge watching something on Netflix, like The Office or Parks and Recs, where you just kind of put it on and you're still living your life. You know, you're still moving around, washing clothes, doing this and that, whatever. Breaking Bad was enthralling, and there was no reason for me to stop outside of exhaustion and necessity for sleep. It was like, holy shit, what's going to happen next? I remember wrestling being like that at one point, and I can't pinpoint, it's not Attitude Era, it's not Ruthless Aggression Era, it's just certain moments where you're like, hell yeah, I really, really, I can't wait for Mondays. You know, and now, I mean, realistically, how important is it to us outside of this show or our jobs on certain wrestling sites? You know, that just kind of made me bummed out that the storyline that we saw was essentially the best one in a long time, and it belongs to Triple H.
I mean, you could say that about several of the previous Manias, though. The big story going into WrestleMania 30, back when we were first starting this show, Tony, was the Triple H Daniel Bryan storyline.
Yeah, but that's Daniel Bryan's story, not Triple H's story. This is going to be Triple H's story, and to an extent, Batista. No current talent is going to benefit from this. And I'm not mad about that, okay? I want that to be clear. I'm not upset that this match is happening. I think that it has intrigue and it has good story and it has history and it has something to latch onto, and Batista's going to be a great heel. I'm upset, or at least a little bit bothered, that there's potential for this for many other people and they just kind of don't do it. But when they do it, it's like half-assed and not a complete story. And man, there's just so much there's so much potential with the people that they have.
I mean, we can also just sum this up real, like, in a microcosm with today's show. Batista takes out Ric Flair to get Triple H to pay attention after years of frustration, after being overlooked, however you want to, you know, frame that. Jinder wanted a fight because he wasn't invited to a party.
There it is.
It doesn't matter what you think.
And thus brings us to the end of the tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Favorite match or moment, Tony?
Shit, man. You know, I really want to give it to Batista just because the moment itself was kind of badass. But like I said, I kind of walked away with like, wait, hold on. What happened? let's see. Yeah, I'll just give it to Batista. I mean, you know, everyone's going to – not everyone. A lot of people are excited and very happy for Roman Reigns. But that is not the show. That's outside the show. And I'm happy for him. And I'm very, very glad that he's not going to die, at least not anytime soon. But with regards to the show, Batista returning, that's great.
Andrew.
Yeah, I'm in the kind of default give it to Reigns, you know, category, because much like even Tony brought up when we were going over it, as soon as Reigns came out, like, there was energy, there was an electricity, there was a pop, and it's just, it shows that regardless of if they liked his character beforehand or not, people stopped being douchey long enough to appreciate the fact that he wasn't going to die. He beat cancer. He came back. Like, even if he gets booed next week, the point is people still seem genuinely happy somebody is back on television, regardless of how you react to their character. So that was a little bigger than the moment. Yes, yes, yes. But I'm still going to give it to Roman.
I'm going to go with match here, and we agree to disagree on this one, guys. I actually really enjoyed the Balor and Leo Rush match for what it was. I thought that it could have been a potential star-making performance for Leo because he did get to hang toe-to-toe with one of the upper mid-card, lower-end main eventers on Monday Night Raw. And I think that if they decide to take the opportunity to do something with this, that Leo could be have standout potential once he breaks away from Bobby Lashley as well. I will be discussing the Roman thing in just a few seconds, though. I will say that much. Let's talk about your least favorite match or moment, Tony.
Shit. I don't know. I know there's a lot that I didn't like. I'm drawing a blank here. I'm going to go with the Jinder. Just Jinder angle moment, specifically Jinder, not so much angle. He's just lazy. It's just lazy writing.
Andrew?
Now, you see, for Greg Watchery, I wanted to go with the Jinder since that's kind of how I ended things on the comparison, just because he was fighting over an invitation to a birthday party, which is just awful. Like, that's kindergarten fucking bullshit. Like, that's stupid. But there was so much
Jindergarten.
Gender Garden, oh, so good. Fling the things in Gender Garden. It's like finger painting. Oh, it's finger painting.
Finger painting.
Gender. Finger painting in Gender Garden.
I fucking hate both of you right now.
That's so good. But, you know, I'm going to give it to... I'm going to give the Greg Watry to the whole Ascension Heavy Machinery thing, because those are two teams that were supposed to care about at least Heavy Machinery, and we don't. They were both just made to look like jokes, and then I guess Heavy Machinery is going to squash Ascension next week, because everybody does. So, okay. Stupid.
I'm going to go with the Riot Squad versus Rousey and Natalya, not so much for the match itself, but for the fact that I couldn't be bothered enough to care about the match itself. And the only time that they actually got my interest during the course of that match to even notice that there was a match going on was when Becky made her way to ringside. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
Six point five.
Six. I'm 6.25. 6.25, huh? he's between half points. Speaking of Meltzer.
Hey, I
care
like
to
quarter
expand
points too. Shut up.
Care to expand upon that thought, Tony, as far as why you're going 6.5?
Wrestling was waning. Stories weren't making all that much sense. It was really nice to see Batista. I can't deny the feeling that it resulted in. Not in my penis. Nothing happened there.
Do you know how big Batista's dick is?
I wonder if Batista hung out with Bailey at all in her badunkadunk.
I do feel like Aaron Solo would be a cuck. Anyway, Andrew, scale of 1 to 10.
You know, I was going to give it a 4.5 because the show itself did nothing for me. The wrestling wasn't very good. The only parts that mattered were the beginning and the end, and that would be where all the points lay. But I'm going to bump the 4.5 up to a 5. Purely because of white privilege and the fact that there was no Lucha House Party. So fuck those stupid Rattlers. Fuck the stupid Mexicans. Fuck them. It's a 5.
Hey, God.
See how I bring that back? That's a callback, motherfuckers.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm going to need a second. God damn you, Andrew, popping me on air like that. Motherfucker.
I have my moment.
I'm going to go with the 7. I'm a little bit higher than Tony was, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that this crowd actually gave a fuck. God, last week's episode was such a chore to get through because that crowd in Lafayette, Louisiana sucked ass. The crowd in Atlanta tonight was motivated, they were interested, they were interactive, and they at no point did they attempt to try to take over the show either. They did what a wrestling crowd is supposed to do. They brought an energy to the arena that the performers were able to feed off of. I thought most of the matches were pretty good. I enjoyed the McIntyre-Ambrose match. I enjoyed the Balor and Leo match. I liked the tag team match for all 2.5 minutes that it ran between Aleister and Ricochet against the Revival, although I wish the Revival would be getting more. But they got the tag titles now, so I guess they're bulletproof. And the crap stuff, the Bailey and Nia match and the Mahal and Angle match, while not Bailey and Angle's faults respectively, was kept to a minimum with most of the action happening either during the commercial break in the case of the women's match and 3 minutes overall in terms of the Angle-Mahal match. So I'm going with a 7. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
Okay. So on this one, I'll give it to Reigns because he's a person with value, and tonight he had the most.
Look at you breaking down the acronym. Proud of you.
Thanks. I'm not a big fan of acronyms.
What about abbreviations?
I find them even more annoying.
Sheesh. Sure. So what about contractions?
They're useful, but altogether, no.
You just don't like the shortening of anything, huh?
No, I don't know if you guys noticed, but whenever I never say WYD. I never say, you know, the only acronym I use is LOL, because I feel like that's no longer an acronym. It's moved into a whole other world, kind of like OK.
Well, yeah, LOL has kind of become vernacular because of AOL from like 20-something years ago. So after
yeah.
a while, it's becoming an acronym.
ASL, Andrew?
Now, what has that / drop for the chat room? And then you go, bloop.
Yeah. Nice. We're not old.
No, not at all. Mm-mm. If anybody's
MVP
listening to this,
Andrew,
like, what the fuck is ASL? They're just like, they're using sign language on a podcast? That makes no sense. And then I'm like, wow, if you thought ASL was sign language and you knew that much, you're clever as fuck. We like you. Keep listening to this show.
True.
All right, for the third time, MVP, Andrew.
Oh, yeah, Reigns, duh.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. This one has to go to Roman here. Again, we can say what we want to about Roman Reigns, the character. This was more about Joseph Anna Wise moment, and it's good to have him back. I think that officially wraps us up for tonight. Tony, where can people read your stuff at?
Okay, so check this out, guys. I don't know if you've seen on my social media, but TonyAcero.com is officially mine, and there is a site attached to it. It's up and running. It's very minimal in terms of content, but there will be frequent updates. It has the official title of my third book, which is coming out hopefully later this year. There's a few pieces of poetry on there. There's some updates. It's going to be bigger and bigger as days progress. I'm adding more and more to it weekly just to kind of get a full rounded, you know, idea behind it. So yeah, these things are moving and I'm really excited about it. Aside from that, you can find me at 411mania.com doing my whole Raw recap. Tomorrow I'll be covering SmackDown, I believe, still. Larry is back, but I haven't gotten word as to whether or not he'll be doing it. if he is, then great, because it means I can go out and drink. But if not, I'll be covering SmackDown.
Where can people buy your two previous books at?
You can buy them on Amazon.com. There are links to it on the website. I'm not opposed to it, obviously. Who doesn't like, you know, monetary royalties? But I would rather people just keep an eye out for the third book. Add me on Instagram, Tony Acero Poetry, and just, you know, follow me as on anything that you can, and just get the frequent updates for the next work coming out. Poetry has a very short shelf life in terms of what I feel, what writers who've written feel is quality. So, you know, a lot of it is things to look back on as opposed to things to currently digest. But yeah, go ahead. Do what you want.
Andrew, where can people find you online? I have a pretty good idea.
See, now before I answer that question, is it said that as soon as Tony was talking about his social media, I decided to click on his Twitter just to see, you know, where everything was. And the first thing that stuck out to me was the last thing he retweeted, and that was "Real men eat pussy." That's Tony Acero in a nutshell right there, boys. Like, that's fucking ace number one fucking shit right there.
I will never change.
Can I state that it tells a story of both of us as well, and that you went to his social media, I went to his website.
Fantastic. But alrighty. So you can find me on the Twitter at IWC Warchief. And you can find my writings, rantings, editings, ratings, reviews, God knows what else I'm doing. Ravings, that's another good one that says that are. Yes, but just all the shit that I do, you can find that on thechairshot.com and Chairshot Radio Network.
The kickoff is officially in summer hiatus due to the NFL season being over. We will be back with a preview for the March Madness tournament as the kickoff becomes the tip-off before returning to our regularly scheduled format for our NFL draft preview and review in April. That's over on the rest of the W2M network. You can find my Progress Wrestling reviews, my Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory and Slammiversary 2018 reviews at thechairshot.com. And due to hectic schedule, the newest version of Progress is not quite in the queue yet. I hope to have it up and finished by tomorrow night, so that way we can hopefully get Chapter 3 up sometime this week for Progress Wrestling. Homecoming in April, and All In to be reviewed by yours truly in May ahead of Double or Nothing, depending on whether or not we get to keep the title of the show.
Wouldn't
it be cool
if they
had
to be doing Rebellion?
The April TNA pay-per-view?
Impact, but yes.
Oh, yeah, Impact. Once they get ready for Slammiversary, yes, because that'll probably be – Slammiversary will probably be the next one after Rebellion. I thought it was called United We Stand.
United We Stand is their WrestleMania weekend show that they're doing with WrestlePro in Rahway. So it's not the pay-per-view, quote-unquote. It's a special.
So it's like a Fight TV. It's like a Fight TV gimmick. The actual pay-per-view is Rebellion?
Yes.
When's that?
I believe Rebellion is the last week of April.
All right, that'll be probably when I go to work on Homecoming as kind of a teaser for Rebellion, and then I'll do Rebellion before Slammiversary. We kind of talked about this once we signed off on the show officially last week, how they add the previous pay-per-view to the Global Wrestling Network right before the next pay-per-view. So therefore, I'm actually able to stream it legally for reviews, and I prefer to do that when I'm reviewing content, just because I want to make sure that proper royalties are paid to these people for their content.
Fair enough.
In addition, ATB the Eagle on Twitter, even though I barely use it. You can find me on Facebook in the Chairshot Radio Network and the Chairshot Facebook group, also with the Chairshot Radio Network. Most of the members of the crew are in the Facebook page as well. For the line in the sand, Andrew Ballas. I screwed up your last name that time.
Yeah, but you got the line in the sand, so I'll take it. There we go.
For the line in the sand, Andrew Ballas, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. when it is go-home time, and we have our predictions for WWE Who Gives a Fuck, a.k.a. Fastlane 2019. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday night. Tony, send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Belaz bring you the Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network, online at the Chairshot.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.